I want you to think back to the absolute beginning of your current relationship, or maybe your last one. Think back to that classic honeymoon phase.
Oh, yeah, the best part.
Right. You were sitting at your desk, you're buried in work, and your phone buzzes with a single text message from them.
And everything just stops for a second.
Exactly. Suddenly your heart rate spikes. You get that warm electric rush blooming in your chest. You just feel completely alive. But here is the central question we are exploring today. Why does that exact same notification from the exact same person sitting at that exact same desk 3 years later barely register an emotional blip?
Yeah, it's such a common experience.
Yeah.
And we almost always tend to blame ourselves or, our partners when that initial electricity fades out. We really internalize it.
Oh, totally. We think the romance is dead or we've just grown apart.
Exactly. We think someone is doing something wrong. But the loss of that electric rush is actually a deeply biological, highly predictable physiological response.
Well, welcome to the deep dive. Today, our source material is a truly fascinating masterclass called Biohacking Intimacy: The Neuroscience and Technology of Modern Romance.
Such a great title.
It really is. And our mission today is to explore how cutting-edge wearables, biometric data, and massive behavioral shifts are being used to actually decode a partner's mind. We are looking at how modern relationships are being saved by the very technology that usually tears them apart.
Which is incredibly ironic.
It's wild. And I am thrilled to get into this because we are moving way past like basic consumer gadget reviews here. We are looking under the hood at the actual literal neuroscience of love in 2026.
The core paradox here is, well, it's what makes this entire field of study so compelling to me. For the better part of the last decade, technology has served as the primary assassin of intimacy.
Oh, absolutely. The smartphone glowing in the dark bed.
Right, or the constant infinite scrolling at the dinner table, the endless distractions. But now, that exact same technological infrastructure is being engineered as the ultimate relationship savior. It's like the disease is being reverse engineered into the cure.
So to understand how we biohack our relationships today, we first have to understand what broke our brains in the first place, right? We
Wow.
have to answer why that 3-year text message feels so completely numb.
It really all comes down to the mechanics of a well-documented neurological phenomenon called dopamine
To
resistance.
dopamine resistance.
Yeah, so dopamine is your brain's primary reward neurotransmitter, the chemical of desire, of motivation. When a neurological reward like receiving an affectionate text from someone you are intensely attracted to, when that becomes entirely routine, constant, and highly predictable, the brain physically adapts.
Because it's no longer a surprise.
Exactly. Your baseline dopamine release recalibrates to account for the new normal. Over time, because of that recalibration, you require a significantly higher or more novel stimulus just to achieve that original baseline feeling of excitement.
So it's not that I don't love my partner anymore, it's that my brain has literally built up a chemical tolerance to their digital presence.
Precisely. And tracing the evolution timeline of digital romance shows us exactly how this tolerance was built on a massive societal scale. If you look back at the 2000s, the SMS era.
Oh man, the flip phones.
Back then, text messages literally cost money per message. They were premium commodities
Yeah.
because there was a financial friction. Communication was inherently limited.
Yeah, I remember having like 100 texts a month or something.
Exactly. And because it was limited, every single message received was an event. It fostered this environment of high anticipation.
Well, yeah, you had to press the number 7 4 times on a plastic keypad just to type the letter S. So you absolutely meant what you said, and you weren't going to waste time sending pointless filler.
You really weren't. But then the paradigm shifted completely in the 2010s with the instant messenger era. We gained constant free connectivity. We introduced read receipts.
The worst.
And we introduced social media broadcasting. This birthed an entirely new psychological stressor called left-on-read anxiety.
Oh, that is so real.
We essentially traded the thrill of anticipation for the comfort of infinite availability. This led to an extreme devaluation of textual content. And importantly, it also opened the door for what sociologists call algorithmic microcheating.
Okay, let's define that, because algorithmic micro-cheating is such a wild concept.
It really is.
It's not about secretly messaging someone else, right? It's about how the algorithm on your social feed constantly serves up endless videos of highly attractive, ostensibly available people. It basically tricks your primitive lizard brain into thinking you exist in an environment with infinite mating options.
Right, which subconsciously devalues the commitment you have to your actual partner who is sitting right next to you on the couch.
It's crazy.
It creates a false sense of infinite abundance. And the statistics on how this impacts real-world couples are stark. There is a documented 47% drop in relationship satisfaction directly attributed to fubbing.
Fubbing, which is phone snubbing.
Yes. The act of choosing the digital screen over the physical person in front of you.
It perfectly mirrors the concept of communication inflation. I mean, if a government just prints trillions of dollars, the currency loses all its value, right? You need a wheelbarrow of cash to buy a loaf of bread.
It's a great analogy.
So if you bombard your partner with 100 meaningless WhatsApp messages, memes, and links throughout the workday, you are inflating your communication. You completely devalue your digital presence.
And that devaluation is exactly what brings us into the current 2020s biohacking era. The paradigm is forcefully shifting away from the quantity of connection toward the quality of presence.
Hold on, though. I need to challenge one of the behavioral strategies proposed in the source material here.
Okay, let's hear it.
The research suggests that instead of checking in all day, we should be deploying very strategic, ambiguous, teasing texts, specifically during our partner's work hours, which is their peak cognitive load.
Right, yeah.
And it claims this causes a massive 65% surge in dopamine release. Are we really supposed to play mind games and purposefully ignore our partners during the workday just to manufacture tension?
I get that pushback. It totally looks like a mind game on the surface. But it's actually about the neurobiology of delayed gratification. Cognitive science clearly dictates that the anticipation of a reward is vastly more neurologically powerful than receiving the reward itself.
Okay, so the waiting is the best part.
Exactly. When you send a highly ambiguous or teasing message while your partner's managing a heavy cognitive load, say they're in back-to-back meetings, their brain has to process the intrigue of your message.
But they can't do anything about it.
Right. Their environment physically prevents them from acting on it or engaging in a long back-and-forth conversation. It forcefully delays their gratification until an evening rendezvous. The brain basically stews in that anticipation, and that is what creates that massive 65% dopamine surge. You are mechanically hacking the brain's reward circuitry.
Okay, so mindless constant texting is definitively out. But if we are cutting back on textual overload, what actually fills that void? How do we use our devices to connect in a way that doesn't trigger dopamine resistance?
That brings up this incredibly futuristic concept of sharing silent physiological data, generating a prosthetic for empathy.
A prosthetic for empathy. I love that phrasing.
It's powerful, right? We are moving light years beyond those gimmicky Bluetooth-connected teddy bears from 5 years ago. Think about a very common scenario. Your partner comes home from a long day at work. They walk through the door, drop their bags, give a heavy sigh, and they are incredibly lethargic.
Just totally checked out.
Completely. Historically, without any other context, you might interpret that post-work lethargy as emotional withdrawal. You might internalize it and think, they are losing interest in you, or they are secretly upset about something you did that morning.
And that is exactly how unnecessary fights start. You take their exhaustion personally, you get defensive, and suddenly you're asking, well, why are you ignoring me? And the whole evening spirals into a massive argument.
Now, insert modern biohacking into that exact same scenario. Your partner's wearable device seamlessly transmits their daily telemetry to an app on your phone. Before they even walk through the door, you glance at the data.
Okay.
You see, they only achieved 3 hours of restorative deep sleep last night. And more importantly, their heart rate variability, or HRV, which is a primary biometric indicator of central nervous system stress, is completely in the red zone.
Wow.
Right. Armed with this biological telemetry, you know definitively that their lethargy is physiological. It is not an emotional withdrawal.
It's the difference between flying a plane in a terrible storm by just looking out the window and hoping for the best versus flying completely on instruments. You have a dashboard telling you exactly what is happening under the hood.
I love the instrument analogy. It's spot on.
Yeah, because you know definitively that tonight is absolutely not the night to initiate a heavy relationship discussion or, you know, bring up household chores. You replace emotional guesswork with clinical data. And the hormonal tracking aspect of this takes it even further, doesn't it?
Oh, hormonal tracking is radically altering how couples navigate conflict. A male partner who is algorithmically aware of his significant other's menstrual cycle via a shared health app knows exactly when she's entering the luteal or PMS phase.
Which is when things can get tense.
Exactly. When sudden severe mood shifts occur, instead of interpreting them as relationship decay or irrational behavior, he can attribute those shifts directly to biological fluctuations. He can deploy targeted psychological support rather than getting defensive.
It hacks the friction points of a partnership by preempting destructive misunderstandings. But what does the actual hardware landscape look like for this level of tracking? Because, I mean, not all smartwatches are built to share this kind of intimate data, right?
No, definitely not. The 2026 elite wearables market has fractured into highly specialized tiers. The Oura Ring Gen 4 is currently considered the absolute gold standard for couples.
Really, the Oura Ring.
Yeah. It utilizes exceptional finger capillary sensors, which provide vastly more accurate HRV and sleep stage data than a wrist-based optical sensor. It also has pinpoint ovulation prediction via microscopic ambient temperature shifts.
That's incredible.
And all of this integrates superbly with their native Oura Circles app, which is designed specifically for sharing telemetry with loved ones.
So how does that compare to the heavy hitters like the Apple Watch or Whoop?
The Apple Watch Ultra 3 rates as above average in this specific context. It features robust menstrual cycle tracking and great ambient temperature sensors. But Apple's ecosystem relies heavily on third-party apps to elegantly share that continuous telemetry with a partner.
Gotcha. What about Whoop?
Then you have the Whoop 5.0, which is clinical-grade elite athlete tier hardware. But for relationship biohacking, it actually falls short.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Because it is designed almost entirely for isolated, solo performance tracking. The architecture is hyper-focused on individual muscular strain and recovery, not on shared empathy.
Wait, I have to stop you here because there is a glaring issue with this entire concept. Sharing my minute-by-minute heart rate, my exact sleep cycles, and my hormonal fluctuations with another human being sounds like an absolute privacy dystopia.
Yeah, it sounds intense.
It does. Doesn't this completely kill the mystery and spontaneity of romance? It sounds less like a relationship and more like a medical surveillance state.
That is the most common and, frankly, the most valid concern people have when entering this space. The viability of this technology depends entirely on the application's architecture and the emotional maturity of the couple.
Okay, explain that.
The objective here is context, not surveillance. Modern platforms like Oura Circles allow for highly granular control over what you broadcast. You are not sharing a raw, invasive, real-time EKG readout of your heart.
Right.
The apps synthesize all that complex telemetry and share generalized readiness scores or simple stress indicators. It provides enough context to generate empathy without stripping away your fundamental bodily privacy.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. I'm sharing a green, yellow, or red indicator, not a live feed of my internal organs. But, I mean, data only helps us understand our partner's mind and body state. Biological data by itself is not sexy.
No, it is not.
Seeing that my partner has a readiness score of 42 does not exactly get the sparks flying in the bedroom. So how do we take this telemetry and actually bridge the physical gap? How do we inject novelty back into the relationship?
This is where we transition from purely diagnostic tools into the realm of advanced haptics and the active gamification of intimacy. The hardware leading this charge is fascinating. Look at the Bond Touch 4 haptic bracelet.
The Bond Touch.
Yes. We are talking about a device featuring Bluetooth 5.3, 7 days of continuous battery life, and crucially, end-to-end military-grade encryption.
Okay, let's pause on the encryption. Why on earth does a vibrating couples bracelet need the same level of encryption as a secure banking app?
Because the data being transmitted is profoundly intimate. The flagship feature of these premium haptics is live heartbeat transmission and real-time physical arousal indicators. You do not want a bad actor or a data broker intercepting a live feed of your literal cardiovascular response to your partner.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be terrifying.
Exactly. And the premium 2026 haptic actuators have evolved so far past simple smartphone vibrations. They can actually simulate the exact, nuanced physical pressure of a human heartbeat against your wrist. Yeah. Or they can replicate the distinct sensation of a real-time squeeze. For couples navigating long-distance relationships, this simulated physical proximity is clinically crucial for maintaining relationship survival rates.
It's like we are treating relationships like highly immersive, cooperative video games where you are constantly unlocking new levels together. And the practical applications for this get incredibly creative, especially when you look at the strictly over 18 side of the market.
Oh, absolutely. Couples are utilizing dedicated gamification apps like Kindu or Desire to radically alter their daily routines. They use these encrypted platforms to send covert dares, intimate suggestions, or digital roleplay tasks to each other during the mundane workday.
Which ties perfectly back into the dopamine resistance problem we talked about earlier. You are creating massive spikes of anticipation and dopamine hours before anyone even gets home from the office.
Exactly. And medically vetted applications are taking this a step further by focusing on anatomical diversity and environmental shifts. One of the primary killers of long-term intimacy is falling into a repetitive physical rut.
Right, doing the same thing over and over.
These algorithms scientifically suggest new physical positions and techniques based on human anatomy and the couple's current biometric energy levels. Furthermore, simply shifting the physical environment, taking intimacy completely out of the primary bedroom and into a different space, is neurologically proven to fire entirely new neural pathways in the brain. It artificially simulates the novelty of a new partner.
And the sensory stimulation integration is truly wild. I read that people are leveraging high-quality audio erotica platforms like Dipsy to serve as mental foreplay during their commutes or while doing chores.
Yeah, that's a huge trend right now.
But they take that audio and sync it directly with their bedroom's smart RGB lighting systems. So the physical room shifts hues, colors, and brightness in perfect real-time synchronization with the cadence of the audio story. It creates an entirely immersive cinematic sexual environment.
It forcefully engages multiple sensory inputs simultaneously, which is incredibly effective at overriding daily stress. And speaking of audio, there is a massive behavioral shift occurring in how couples communicate casually. The rapid replacement of raw text with short, asynchronous voice notes.
I do this all the time now.
Most people do. Clinical studies prove that voice notes release significantly more dopamine than a standard text message.
Well, that's because text is inherently flat. It is completely tone deaf. A voice note carries your actual vocal inflection, your laughter, your breath. It reminds the primitive brain that there is a living, breathing human on the other end, not just pixels on a screen.
Exactly.
But wait, let's look at the logical extreme of all this. If I'm wearing a bracelet that perfectly simulates your physical touch on my wrist, and I can just send you a quick voice note that gives your brain a dopamine hit, and we have an app gamifying our interactions so we never have to think of spontaneous ideas, aren't we just building a highly sophisticated excuse to physically avoid each other even more?
Oh, that's a very sharp observation.
Right. Doesn't this entire ecosystem just enable a new, deeper level of the fubbing epidemic?
This represents the most critical vulnerability of relationship biohacking. There's a razor-thin, incredibly dangerous boundary between supporting a relationship with data and controlling a relationship with data, or in your example, using the data to justify complete avoidance.
Yeah, because if I check the app and see your readiness score is terrible today, I might just decide to stay at the office later to avoid you entirely, rather than doing the messy, difficult human work of coming home and comforting you.
Precisely. Engaging with this technology requires an immense foundation of emotional maturity. The experts explicitly warn about the weaponization of biological data. Your partner's REM sleep data should never be used as ammunition during an argument.
Right, you can't be like, you got 8 hours of sleep, why are you mad?
Exactly. You cannot pull up an app and say, look, you got 8 hours of deep sleep last night. You have absolutely no right to be grumpy with me right now. It is meant to be a navigational compass for empathy, not a weapon for invalidation.
And the dark side of this tech goes so much deeper than just petty arguments. Over-tracking induces severe paranoia. It normalizes obsessive location checking and biometric monitoring.
It's exhausting.
People start farming cheap dopamine from algorithmic social feeds and digital interactions rather than doing the actual heavy lifting to connect with the human being sitting across from them. And those beautifully encrypted haptic apps we talked about, they provide the perfect, invisible, covert infrastructure for micro-cheating to escalate into actual affairs.
To understand why these risks exist, we have to look at the massive financial incentives driving the entire movement. This technological boom isn't happening just because tech CEOs suddenly want to help people love each other better.
Shocker.
Right. It is driven by cold, hard economics. Silicon Valley venture capital firms realized a profound truth about software as a service economics. The lifetime value of retaining a coupled user is vastly higher than continually matching single users.
think about the business model of a traditional dating app like Tinder. If your product works perfectly and two people fall in love, they delete your app. You lose two customers. That is a terrible churn-heavy business model.
It really is.
But if you build a relationship maintenance app and a couple integrates it into their daily lives, they become daily active users for the next 40 years.
The dating app market is actively being eclipsed by the relationship maintenance sphere. The relationship tech market is now a staggering $10 billion economy.
$10
billion? Yes. Couples counseling and gamification apps alone are valued at $4.8 billion, and they are growing at over 24% year over year. Haptic wearables represent a $2.4 billion market. Smart sexual health hardware sits at $1.9 billion and is currently in a hypergrowth phase.
When there is $10 billion on the line and the product is literal, intimate biological data, data privacy goes from being a tech nerd concern to a massive societal issue.
Oh, absolutely. Institutional trust is deeply fractured right now. The industry is currently facing a trust index of only 55 out of 100.
Yikes.
Yeah. And this skepticism largely follows several high-profile data leaks involving highly sensitive reproductive health and menstrual tracking apps. Users are acutely aware that their most intimate physical data is being monetized.
It makes you wonder who actually owns your intimacy. Are you building a relationship with your partner, or are you building a relationship with a Silicon Valley server rack?
That is the million-dollar question.
And there is a massive demographic divide in how people are reacting to this, specifically around the rise of AI relationship counseling platforms like Coral or Paired.
AI counseling is a fascinating flashpoint. The developers stress that these AI models are not meant to replace licensed human therapists for navigating deep-rooted trauma or abuse.
That's important.
Very. Instead, the AI acts as a daily communication facilitator. It reads your chat logs, analyzes your text tone for passive aggression, gives you daily conversation prompts, and tries to stop minor everyday friction points from calcifying into major relationship-ending crises.
But the generational split on handing your relationship over to an AI is massive. Gen Z embraces it almost universally. We are seeing an 86% approval rating for AI counseling among Gen Z.
That is huge.
22% of Gen Z males actively engage with their partner's menstrual cycle trackers to understand hormonal shifts, and 74% use gamification apps daily. But Gen X, they overwhelmingly reject the entire concept. Only 28% of Gen X approve of AI counseling in any form, vastly preferring the messy reality of actual human therapists.
It's a huge divide.
It makes you wonder if outsourcing our emotional heavy lifting to an algorithm is actually healthy. Is it a good thing that I need an artificial intelligence to analyze my tone of voice and send me a push notification to tell me if I'm being a jerk to my own partner? If we rely entirely on the algorithm to translate our partner's emotions, don't we eventually atrophy our own inherent empathetic muscles?
It is the defining question of this era. Which brings us to the ultimate verdict synthesized from all this research. We are standing at a critical inflection point in human history. Technology possesses the undeniable dual capability to be either the absolute assassin of intimacy or its ultimate savior.
Smartphones and algorithmic feeds are clinically engineered by thousands of the smartest people on Earth to hijack our dopamine pathways. They literally steal our cognitive presence, pulling our attention away from the living, breathing person sitting right across the dinner table from us.
But the solution to that hijacking isn't a Luddite retreat to the Stone Age.
Hmm.
We can't realistically throw our phones in the river and move to a cabin in the woods.
Right.
The solution the research points to is intelligent biohacking combined with ruthless, strict boundaries. It means leveraging biometric data to generate baseline empathy. It means using haptics to bridge physical voids when distance requires it. But critically, it means erecting impenetrable digital boundaries within the physical home.
And those vital statistics in all of our source material highlights exactly that. Relationships that strictly enforce physical tech-free zones in their households, like no phones in the bedroom or no screens at the dinner table, have a 3.2 times higher survival rate. 3.2 times. Love in the modern digital era is no longer just a passive feeling. It requires active, tactical cyber maintenance.
It is entirely about using the technology to clear the friction out of the way so you can get back to the core human connection and then having the discipline to actually turn the technology off.
And that leaves you with a final thought to ponder as you look at the screens in your own life. If technology truly becomes the ultimate frictionless empathy prosthetic, if your smartwatch preemptively alerts you to your partner's every physical need, every cortisol spike, and every mood shift via perfectly visualized dashboard data, will we eventually lose the natural, messy human skill of actually reading the subtle, unquantified emotional cues on the face of the person we love? When the battery dies, will we still know how to look at them and just know? Keep those boundaries strong, protect your dopamine, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.